Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Rose Quinn Podcast. I'm excited about the guest that I have today. It is Nicola Reyna, who is an amazing author, and she was actually my first and only author that I interviewed who's across the pond, which was crazy when scheduling, but worked out amazing. She's the author of The Girl Before You that actually is out on paperback now. I've talked about this book on the podcast before, and she will tell us a little bit about it. I've also posted about it on my Instagram, so if you want to go read my review of it there, it's on my website too. Wow, it's a lot of places, but you don't want to miss it. It's an amazing book, and you won't regret buying it. Before we get to the interview with Nicola, we're going to talk about my favorite book of this episode, which The Girl Before You, I think, was already my favorite book of an episode. It's also my favorite book of this episode, so I'll have two. My second one is Waiting at Hayden's by Riley Costello. I posted about this on my Instagram a couple weeks ago, last week. I have no sense of time anymore, but it is a story of timing. It's a love story. It's a romance. There is no murder in it, so this is a departure for me lately, because you know me, I'm all about murder. But it is, you know, one of those romance stories that you just fall into and you don't want to let go of. So let me read the blurb for you. Childhood best friends Charlie Anderson and Jack Logan fall madly in love during college and can't imagine a life apart. But when they land dream opportunities on opposite ends of the country following graduation, they are forced to make a heart-wrenching pact. In the hope of one day restarting their love story, they set a date to reunite in 5 years at their favorite restaurant. Restaurant owner Gianna Hayden is 37, single, and one bad date away from giving up on finding the right guy when she meets Peter Clark on a dating website. Attractive, kind, and driven, he is exactly what she thought she was looking for. But as the day of Charlie and Jack's reservation approaches, Gianna finds herself reflecting on the kind of passionate love her former customers once had and begins to question her bond with Peter. These two riveting stories converge on the night of the fateful reunion. Gianna, Charlie, and Jack are all forced to make difficult choices as they struggle to follow their hearts, and ultimately each must decide where their true feelings lie before time runs out. It's great. Riley has some really cool twists and like plot lines that you don't expect to be connected that are. If you love Nicholas Sparks, you'll love this book even more. It is like his stories, but like more real world. That was Riley's, you know, focus, was to make it like a love story, but something that had like more reality to it. And I think she did a wonderful job. It is one that you guys, I think, will all enjoy if you're looking for something a little lighter. All right, I want to do my lit chit chat, which I like doing these. I think these will be a new thing in each episode. But I posted about this a little bit, but you know, there's been a lot going on in my world lately. Lots of drama, lots of stress. And I find that I have a really hard time getting a decent amount or any words out on a page when I'm feeling that level of stress. I know that I'm not alone in this. There are lots of other writers who post about this and are very open about it, and I love that. It definitely makes me feel less alone, and I'm sure lots of other people feel less alone because of that open conversation, which I think social media, the focus for so many people, can just be on the highlights and the good times, and you know, you don't want to bring people down or be a downer and post about all the stressful things going on in your life, but I think that can all help us realize that not everybody's got this perfect dream world going on. We've had a lot of parenting drama going on in our blended family life, and I have always had really bad anxiety, so it makes me really susceptible to these stressful emotions. I just, you know, they overtake me sometimes, and I'm also really exhausted and completely ready for my kids to go back to school. So it's probably a combination of all of these things. So, you know, I always ask myself, what can I do during these times of emotional writer's block? Because it's different than just feeling stuck in my story, not knowing where to go next. It's like my brain, I can't even compute words and put them out, or, you know, compute the story and what I need to do. So usually, I usually don't force myself to write more than I can get out. Writing has always been a very therapeutic thing for me, so I try. I sit down and I read where I'm at, and I try to get something out on the page, even if it's only like 100 words. There was like 3 days where I think I got 67 words one day, 94, and then, you know, like maybe 150 the last day. And I try to just do that and not force myself to do more than I can. And I read other books and I watch my favorite shows. I try to brainstorm my story just to maybe get me excited about a scene that I want to work on. I don't know, I think it's really important to not feel guilty about not writing in those moments. It's hard to not feel guilty because, you know, if you're not writing, you're not progressing, you're not, your story's not moving, you're not getting closer to that end mark. But I think it's really important to let your mind heal and relax, to remember that your mental health, my mental health, everybody's mental health is crucial to everything. It's crucial to our happiness, our families, our writing. This is what we do. We write, we create worlds and stories, but we cannot do that well or at all if we aren't taking care of ourselves. So I'm taking care of myself and I'm working on other things. I spent one day that I just, you know, had that emotional block up working on my website, reorganizing some things. I did that thing with my book reviews where I, you know, made it so you can jump around by alphabet so they're a little bit more organized. And I think part of this whole thing for me is the change in my job. I, instead of working, I'm at home with my kids, which I love and love being around them, but it's, you know, different. I've never not worked a job and been in an office and gone the same place every day. So I'm also trying to maneuver around that. But, you know, I'm taking this podcast more full time. I think you guys are going to be blown away by the guests that we have on, that I have on the rest of the year. And I'm even starting to get the 2020 list put together. So I think that's definitely helping me get de-stressed, just take care of my head and my body and everything else that I've got going on. So, you know, I'll be one of those people, but if anything I said like resonates with you, you're not alone. You're okay. If it's hard to write, nothing is wrong with you. Don't feel guilty. You're not a bad writer. You shouldn't stop. Like, keep writing. Even if you only get a few sentences down, that's writing. And some days that's all we can do, and that's fine. But if you want to chat about it, I'm your girl. Let's chat and help each other out. Okay, so my lit chit chat is done, and now we're going to get to the very best special guest. Nicola is amazing, and you guys are going to love getting to know her and her story and her amazing journey. It is truly one that I was like, whoa, that's crazy. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get started, and let's have you tell us a little bit about your book, The Girl Before You, because it's coming out in paperback, right?
Coming out on paperback on the 22nd of August.
Oh, that's so awesome.
We're about a month away now. It's quite exciting. Yeah. And it's out already on ebook, as you know. Came out in May on ebook. But it opens with Alice Bell, who's a successful family lawyer, seeing on a train, or thinking that she sees on a train, someone called Ruth Walker, who drowned 15 years ago, or thought to have drowned 15 years ago, when they were both at university.
I love it. And something I really loved about it was just, I always love dual timelines in novels. They're like my favorite thing ever. So I love how you kind of go back and forth and see what's going on. But I think when you have moments like that where she thinks she sees her on the train, you're like, call into question her reliability a little bit, which is the best too, because you're like, who should I believe if it, you know, not the person, if not the main character, this point of view that I'm reading.
Yeah, it was really fun playing with that. I really enjoyed that with Alice, and I suppose that happens in quite a lot of psychological suspense novels.
Yeah.
You have that kind of, is the protagonist, are they going mad? Are they, you know, how much can you trust them? How much can they trust themselves?
Exactly.
And I liked, actually, as a kind of extra layer with Alice as well, I liked that she was pregnant and, you know, she has all the pregnancy hormones in her body, and it became a way of, I suppose, her husband or her friends being able to occasionally dismiss some of her suspicions because she's pregnant. So I don't know, it was quite a fun thing to play with.
Oh, for sure. It was awesome. And I think you did a wonderful job. So I'm so excited for it to come out on paperback for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your journey to getting this book published. How did that all happen?
Well, I think I've been thinking about this, and I think the longest part of my journey was sort of before I found my agent and before I got published, when I was lucky enough to find my agent in last year. Everything happened quite quickly, so yeah. I feel like that part of my journey has been quite quick. But I've been working on this book for a really long time. It took quite a lot of structuring and then restructuring, as you say, because of the dual timelines,
yeah.
And it's told from three points of view. So it's told, as we mentioned, it's told in part from Alice's point of view, but we also hear the story from Naomi, who is the sister of Ruth, the sister of the missing girl, who works in a charity looking for missing people and is missing her sister a great deal. And then the third person who tells the story is Kat, who is Ruth's best friend at university. So it was quite difficult, I would say.
I would say, yeah.
just structuring that, especially for my first novel, I kind of bit off a bit more than I could chew at times. And I actually, when I first started out, I told it from five points of view, which was
oh
just
wow,
I know.
Wow.
I originally, Ruth also had a voice, and then Richard, who is Ruth's boyfriend, also had a voice. So that was a lot, and the timelines as well. That was a lot. So I think I just kind of rather gamely just thought, oh, I always wanted to write a novel. I'm going to write a novel, and I sort of off I set, and then kind of realized how difficult it was. So there was a lot of reworking. Put it that way.
Yes, but that's part of everyone's process, right?
No, absolutely, absolutely. I think this time around it's really different, because this time around I'm writing to plan, and I know where I'm headed. Whereas I think when I started, it was sort of end of 2010, beginning of 2011, that kind of time. Like I was just, you know, I just set off kind of typing away without kind of knowing quite how much work I had ahead of me.
Yes.
So in terms of my journey, a lot of that journey, I would say most of the years were spent writing and rewriting. At the end of 2015, I had a first draft, and that was the first draft with five people or five points of view.
Mm-hmm.
And at that sort of time, I started showing it to agents. Then, I mean, I say agents, I talked to a friend who's an agent, and I showed it to her, and she said, I think you're struggling with structure a bit. I think it needs to be told from fewer points of view. And then I worked with a freelance editor who more or less gave me the same feedback. So then from 2015 to about 2017, I completely reworked it, restructured it. And then in 2018, right at the beginning, I came second in a competition called the Cheltenham First Novel Competition over here. And my prize was representation, so
oh, wow.
That was where my agent came along. So in terms of looking for an agent the second time around, it was quite quick. And then by summer last year, we had an offer from Avon Books, who are a division of HarperCollins.
Yeah.
So you know, it then moved quite quickly. But I felt like I'd really sort of put the you know, the work in the years.
You sure did put the work in the years before, no doubt about it. So you didn't ever have to query. Did you query before that competition?
So not really.
Oh my gosh, you're so lucky.
It was quite interesting. I went for coffee. It was really weird. So I went for coffee with a friend who lives locally. I'm trying to think when this was, like January 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed him a chunk of the book, and he was great. He was fantastic, but he said, you know, it was a no from him, and he gave me some feedback. And I think I have to say, after all that work, it was a bit of a blow. I think I had high expectations, and so I took myself off for a bit of a walk, and I went into a bookshop, and I just comfort bought loads of books, and I came back. I know. I'm sure you can sympathise.
Yes.
And then I came back home, and I was really quite a kind of, it was quite a glum day. And then that same day, the email from the competition organisers arrived, saying that I'd been picked as a runner-up, and saying that my prize was going to be representation. And that was just, it was such a weird and amazing feeling to have those two things happen on the same day, you know, to have a no in the morning and a yes in the afternoon. And it just really made me, it gave me the sense of, like, I don't know, like doors opening or shutting or something like that.
Yeah, that's crazy. That is quite a day. I didn't really like it, that both happened in the same day. That's awesome. I do think that you're very lucky that you kind of got to skip out on the whole querying process. To get a no in person to your face, though, I feel like stings a little bit. That would be hard.
Yeah, no, it was, and I think I had a lot pinned on it. But you're right. I was really lucky to skip that process. And I do. I'm on Twitter a fair bit, and I see a lot of kind of and querying tweets and things like that. So I do appreciate that is quite a tough part of the process.
It is, but I think your journey was the really long revision process, and that's where you had to labor the most. Whereas some people labor a lot in the querying process, you just spend a lot of time working on the structure and the revisions, and that's hard enough on its own.
I think in a way you might be right, because I had spent years, and because I had like completely had to rethink the book and just, you know, put a lot of work in it, and I'd worked with a freelance editor, you know, I kind of felt in a different way I'd done my time.
Mm-hmm. I think so, for sure. Well, I mean, do you, just in your, and maybe, you know, this, you won't have, like, super specific ones, since you didn't actually go through, like, a long, arduous query process, but as, you know, an author who has a book published and representation, and just from what you've seen maybe on Twitter and in the industry so far, do you have any tips for writers who are in that querying process right now?
Well, I think the two things that I was starting to think about, one was I started to look at agents who represented authors I really liked. I suppose everybody will already know that, but I think it's a good place to start.
For sure.
And authors who are also similar to me or doing similar kinds of things, or people I really admired. So that was one thing I was doing. And also I think if you can and where you can, trying to talk to people you know, or friends of friends, or who work in publishing, or who are agents, or know people who might be agents. I think that kind of thing is quite helpful. I think Chris Babu was saying that, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Similarly, that, you know, anyone you know who works in the industry is a good place to start. And also, it occurred to me with querying as well, it's a bit like getting married. Like, you only work in so many ways, but you only need one person to really get what you're doing,
right,
and to really like what you're doing. You don't need everybody to like your stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And that somehow I find that really comforting. It's like getting married or buying a house, and it's just this, you know, if you haven't found that one person yet, that one person is still out there, and that it just made such a difference to me. And when I found my agent and found someone who really believed in the book, it really did help with my confidence.
I think so. I think that you know, that's kind of like a hard pill to swallow at a certain level, like, oh, not everybody's gonna like it. But I think it's good to learn in the query process, because then if you do get an agent and do get a book published, not everybody's gonna like your book either. Readers, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I suppose it's something that we all have to learn kind of over and over again.
Yes.
And you're right, like, the sooner the better, right? Like, you know, but it's great when one person does.
Oh, for sure.
That's a really good start.
Yes. I think that are some great tips for writers who are in the querying process. Let's talk about writing a little bit for you, and how And what the hardest part of writing is for you, and then the hardest part of being an author is for you.
Sure. I was thinking about this. I mean, writing is such a mixed thing because it's sort of sometimes I just feel like it's all hard.
Yes, that's very true.
But sometimes I feel like it's all wonderful as well, you know. I think for me the hard thing is coping with the bad days. When your writing isn't really working, or you know when it's not flowing, or you don't like what you've written, or when you know your confidence is down. And I think it's really tough because, you know, all writers love what they do and care so much about what they do. And I think it's really hard, you know, coping with that, the kind of the painful days or the bad days is really, really tough. I'm personally quite dramatic in my feelings, and I've got quite a short memory. So, like, if I have a bad day, I'm quite like, oh, you know, it's all terrible, and I'm terrible, and it's not working, and you know, I really kind of catastrophize. And you know, lucky to have people around me, like my husband, who can kind of take a wider view and just say, you know, you had a good day yesterday, and you might have a good day tomorrow, and just sort of not take the bad day to be kind of how it's going to be always, because the next day you might start writing again and you might totally be in the flow and something kind of magical might happen in the process that makes you incredibly happy. So I think, yeah, I think for coping with the bad days, and that they can come in so many different sort of shapes really as a writer.
Yeah, I think that's very true.
In terms of being an author, again, there are lots of kind of parts that are hard. As well as being wonderful, I think one of the biggest lessons I've had to learn recently is about sort of sharing your baby with the world, you know, and letting go of it, and realizing that you can't control how everyone reacts, and you can't control what people make of it. You really have to kind of let it go. I was out in the Caribbean when the ebook of The Girl Before You came out, and the morning it came out, it was a really beautiful day, and it sounds sad, but I sat on the beach and I kind of wrote a letter to the book about all the feelings I had about it and all the memories I had, and I kind of I wanted to do this like sort of like letting go process, you know, of sort of kind of in a way almost saying goodbye to it and letting it go into the world. But it was quite therapeutic, but again, it's one of those lessons that I feel like I've had to learn over and over again.
Oh, for sure. I think that, you know, writing is something very personal and something you, like with The Girl Before You, you spent a very good number of years working on it in so many different ways. And I think we become very close, and there's a lot of ourselves in the books. And so to let it out in the world where people are going to judge it and say good things and bad things about it is terrifying. But I mean, that's why we do it, but it's also terrifying.
It is. And it's a strange experience at first. But you get more used to it. And as you say, that's why we do it.
Yeah.
You know, we want to read our books and we want to share our stories.
Yes. So let's talk about the flip side. Let's talk about the best parts of being a writer and an author.
I think probably all the authors you speak to say this, but I just love the writing. I love the magic of it.
Yeah.
I love that you don't always know what's going to happen. David Grossman, the Israeli novelist, has this sign above his desk saying, I had no idea I was going to write this. And I know, but I love that. I love that you can't always see.
No, that's totally true.
You see where things are going to go. Or when characters can appear, or plot twists can appear, and I think there's something, I don't know, I shouldn't use the word magical too much, but I think there is something very special about that.
I think so, for sure. I think a lot of, you know, I like to write sort of with like a general outline and but I'm not like super strict about it. So a lot of things just happen as they happen as I'm writing. And that is sort of the best part of it. Like this story you think you might have had takes a weird turn and becomes something even better. So I think there's a lot of, if you have, you know, even in revisions or people who outline super heavily, I think it happens to them too, you know. The writing takes its own turn and leads you where it should be going.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it, you know, it kind of should be allowed to happen. Like a novel should be able to breathe a bit and have that kind of process happen a bit. Because I think some really, for me, like some really special things have come out of that, or characters have come out of that, and I'm really grateful. I know this is something you want to talk about later, but that I'm more of a kind of pantser. Like I am kind of someone who will go with the flow a bit more.
I am definitely that way too. So, what about being an author? What's the best part so far for you?
Well, the sense of achievement is good. It's a really good feeling, and to see it was really amazing when my proofs came through, and to see The Girl Before You as a solid book was incredible, and I'm really looking forward to that again when the finished copies come through. That's pretty special. But I have to say, I've also really enjoyed connecting with other people who love books. I really, you know, since this has all happened for me, I've just met some wonderful people. My agents at LBA have been fantastic, and other people in publishing and bloggers and readers, and I think everyone shares that love of books, and
Oh,
that's
yeah.
I really am grateful that all of that has been brought into my life.
I can't remember who said it. I feel like one of my guests on this podcast had said it before, but book people are the best people. Like, we all love books, so that's all why we're here. You know, even if somebody ends up not loving your book as much as you do, like, they still love books, and that keeps us all in common. And I feel like there's a really wonderful community of, like you said, agents and readers and bloggers, but also just within the writing community. You know, people are supportive and cheer you on as things happen, and you know, there as you
Absolutely.
progress at different levels, it's not like, you know, I'm sure that, you know, I have struggled with it where you see like 10 people get an agent in a week and you're like, God dang, what am I doing wrong? But you're so happy for those people. I want those people's books out in the world too, so that I can read them. Like, we're all cheering for one another.
Absolutely. And I think we all have days where, you see someone else's book and it's got an incredible review, or they sold millions of copies or whatever. I think everyone has that day where they're like kind of, oh, but what about me? And sometimes I just have to tell myself, like, there is enough for everyone. Like, there is enough to go around. Just because somebody else has got an agent doesn't mean to say that you won't. You know what I mean? Or because a book has got a good review, it's not taking away from you. And I think it is difficult because we are in the community, everyone is doing a similar thing and all kind of trying, aiming for a similar thing with writers. And it's sometimes it's wonderful, but if you're having a low day, it can be a bit harder to see other people's success. But no, I definitely sympathize with that. But no, I do say to myself, there is enough to go around with everyone.
For sure, there's room for all of us. Even books that are like have similar main aspects, you know. Nobody's gonna write the same book, and it's
No,
all gonna be
exactly.
different.
No one's book, no one else's book is going to be like your book, you
Yes.
know?
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about you being a pantser. How, you know, when you sat down and you were like, I wanna do this, I wanna write this book, how did that process go for you, and did you just kinda like figure out that you were a pantser?
I just kind of thought I'm going to do it. We joined a local writing group. I think partly, so my husband's a writer as well. I think partly we joined one because I always knew I wanted to do it. I'm a journalist by profession, but I kind of, much as I like writing nonfiction, I knew it wasn't quite enough. So we started this group, and I just started tapping away in kind of fragments, and I didn't know where I was going, and I started all these fragments and all these voices, and gradually it started coming together. But that was naturally, I think that's kind of how I want to approach things. I think, only comparing the book I'm working on now and my last book, but this one is different because I'm writing to a synopsis, I have a plan, and I think of it like a map, you know, but the territory is still can be unexpected. So the second time around, it's a different process for me. I'm doing things like this. So this time around, I'm doing things like, it sounds really obvious, but I'm writing chronologically. You know, I'm starting at the beginning. I know, crazy,
That's
crazy.
just a novel idea right there.
I know. That's a is like trying to put together a jigsaw. I mean, is it weird? Because in some way, I really didn't make it easy for myself, but in another way, that was my natural way. That was kind of what felt right for me. So I think left to my own devices, that is possibly how I'd write, but it's very time consuming and laborious. So I think this second way of doing it to a map where you are following a plan, and you can have some surprises along the way, but you basically know where you're headed, is probably pretty more time efficient.
Certainly. It is a little bit more time efficient. I wrote a novel pretty much the same way, just kind of like in fragments, because like when you get inspiration for a certain moment, you want to write it down and figure it out. But it definitely, being a pantser sometimes can really add on to that revision time. Can really make that a little harder. Yeah.
I think part of it with me was that I didn't want to put myself off, you know. I was so glad and happy to be writing in the early days that I didn't want to kind of scare myself by saying, you've got to write it this way or you've got to do it that way.
Yeah.
You know, and so these little fragments kind of came out. I just sort of let myself do that. And also suited my life at the time. I was working as a magazine editor. I was super busy. You know, I had like lunch breaks and weekends and kind of on my phone after work and that kind of thing. So these little fragments really suited my life. Whereas this time around, I'm only working part time. So I have a lot more time. I can sit down and I can force myself to write chronologically. And I can, you know, I can be a bit more structured about it.
Yes. Well, that's good. I think it's always helpful, you know, just to know that everybody writes it differently. I love asking that question because there's so many people that have a way different process than me or you or, you know, the next person. So I think just as new writers are like, how do I even do this? How do I approach it? Sometimes it's just, you just got to figure it out as you go. And I think my process has sort of changed throughout writing more. Really pantsed it with one novel, then really had to outline, and because it was sort of like it's a murder mystery whodunit, so I had to really figure it out more. And then with this one I'm working on now, I'm a little bit kind of back to pantsing a little bit because I don't have as many pieces to fit together. So it's fun, but I think it can change too depending on what you're writing.
What's it like going back to pantsing after planning?
It's fun. I think it startled me a little bit in the beginning because I was like, oh, what am I doing? Where am I going? But then I sort of figured out, my roadmap, like you said. I just wrote down some quick notes of kind of where I wanted it to go, and that helped me a little bit and kind of spurred me. So now I'm in a pretty good rhythm, and it's nice just to sit down and write and see what my characters want to do that day.
Yeah.
It's fun. That's fun. Yeah. So let's talk about your love of writing. So you said you were a journalist by profession. So I am assuming you've loved writing for a long time. Kind of how did that all get started for you?
I think I was just that kind of classic, you know, classic case of a book lover, really. My mom found a picture recently that I put on Instagram of, I must have drawn it when I was about 5. And I'm sitting at the table, like writing a book.
Uh-oh.
And the caption is me doing my book. And I think I just always loved books and read the covers when I was little and got kind of told to put them away by my parents and loved stories and tell myself stories and just, you know, I think it's that quite classic case, really. I think the only other thing that came close when I was younger was I really love animals, so I did think about training to be a vet. I'm trying to think of how old I was, kind of thinking about like 15, 16 sort of age when you're finishing your GCSEs in the UK and you're going on to your A-levels. And had a wonderful English teacher, actually, and I think he kind of spotted that I didn't want to give up English, which is what I would have had to have done to be a vet, and I would have had to have done all the sciences. And I think he just... I think I knew that deep down, but it helped have someone else say,
"Oh, for sure,
I'll give this up." And that was really, I think that was the moment, you know, when you see a kind of fork in the path, and that was the moment like, right, I'm going down this way, I'm not going down that way. But no, all the usual things. Like I worked when I first left university. I used to work in a bookshop. I've always loved libraries. I've always loved literary festivals.
I love it.
Just books have always just been my kind of solace and yeah, joy really.
I love that. I think I love hearing the stories of that. Like I myself have been a book lover since I was little and wrote stories when, you know, I was in middle school that were terribly, terribly bad. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. But then I love hearing it, too. And people's love of writing starts later in life. I think it finds us all in different points. But I do think there's something to be said for a lifelong love of books. And bookshops and, like, smelling old books and libraries. Yeah, I could just sit and do that forever.
And I remember, like, when I used to work in a bookshop, the excitement of when a new book comes in. That, you know, that never gets old. And it's interesting because I trained, as you say, I always knew I wanted to be a writer, so I trained to be a journalist, and that has been my day job for a long time. And I love it, and it has taught me a lot. But I do find that writing, you know, for me, writing nonfiction wasn't quite enough. Like I needed to make stuff up. I needed to tell stories.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting as well. That's quite a different process, you know.
Oh, for writing, sure.
Writing. You know, I mean, obviously there are skills that cross over and that can help, but it is, and you go into a completely different headspace for writing fiction as well.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about your vision process, because you spent quite a number of years revising. How did that look for you, and how did you try and tackle that?
Well, like I say, I think, you know, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so I think I really wanted it to be in, like, good shape before other people saw it or before it went out too widely. Like I say, I spoke to this agent early on, and then I spoke to the freelance editor, so I reworked it a lot. I've also been a member of a writing group for a long time, as I mentioned, so mm-hmm. I always have early readers and early feedback, which is really, really helpful.
Yes.
So I'm trying to think where it went from then. So after I'd reworked it, as you mentioned, I entered that competition, I got my agent, and at the same kind of time I'd started to send it out just to a couple of friends for opinion as well. So my friends' opinions came back at the same sort of time as my agent's opinion, and I kind of had another look at it with those kind of, with all that feedback. And my agent at LBA, who was Danielle Zigner, she's moved on now actually, but she really helped smooth out the ending of the book with me, which was fantastic. It was kind of like it wasn't quite there, to be honest, and she really helped kind of sort that out for me. It's quite tricky with thrillers, you know what I mean? You really need to the end, obviously the endings and the kind of the plotting really needs to work. And then I suppose the final part of my process was it going to Avon, and my editor at Avon, Rachel Fortner Wilcox, was really good at smoothing out the details or the little things that I kind of, you kind of think, I might be able to get away with that. And she'd be like, not getting away with it. Like, what's happening here? Or what happened when so-and-so said this earlier? Or whatever it was, just like kind of, idea.
That's what editors are good for, to catch those little things that we're, like, too tired to see. We've read it too many times, you know, that sort of stuff.
Kinda, absolutely.
Yeah, loses.
I think it makes you realize, like, what a kind of, like, it's teamwork as well. I think when I started out, I just had this idea of tapping away at the computer on my own, and of course there is a certain amount of that, but also, like, other people's help is just invaluable, you know?
Oh, for sure, and I think, you know, fresh eyes is wonderful on it. I did something with my one I just finished that I read it out loud, which was really helpful because I saw, you know, some weird sentences, but also just stuff that clearly in my mind I was, like, totally skipping over and just, like, closing my eyes to, I guess, you know, because in your head you just fill in missing words or, you know, make it sound how it should. But I think, yeah, there's something to be said for fresh eyes and people who haven't read it 12,000 times already.
No, reading out loud is really, really helpful. So at class we do that, like, we'll bring a section along and one of us will read out loud, and as you say, you catch so much stuff that you don't catch when you're reading on the screen or even on the page, and you hear repetitions, don't you? And you hear if the kind of cadence of a sentence isn't working, it's really good for flagging those things up.
For sure. Well, I love to know about people's revision process and how it all works. And I think teamwork is super important. Writing groups, critique partners, beta readers, you know, our community is so supportive. So take advantage of it.
Absolutely. Do you work with freelance editors? Or?
I have before. I've had an editor actually edit a query letter before, which was super helpful because I suck at query letters. Query letters are the death of me. So I have before, but I don't feel like I've really queried something or planned to really heavily enough to invest in a freelance editor because they can be, you know, expensive, rightfully so, yeah. Because of the valuable feedback they'll give you. But
yeah,
I've relied, you know, a lot on my critique partners and beta readers to get that first round of revisions done. But I'm sort of just in this place where I'm not trying super hard to get an agent and just trying to get some more underneath my belt of writing. I've written a lot, but, you know, I just think there's always room for more practice. So maybe next year will be my year of really trying to get an agent.
I think also, like, it's about doing things in spurts, isn't it? You kind of, I think you can't, you know, consistently chasing can be quite tough.
Yes.
Like, whether it's job hunting or whatever it is, I think, like, having a break from something and then coming back to it with renewed energy can be quite a good idea.
I think so, too. I think I finished maybe 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I finished a novel, you know, wrote it during Nano and revised it a ton, and it went through a lot, and I queried it pretty heavily, but then I love the book, but I feel like I don't want it to be my debut, you know? Like, sometimes you have to make those decisions, too. Like, I think I'm going to start with another one if I can, so it's always that trying to figure out, because it is a business, and you're trying to think about what agents are really going to, you know, get and what's going to work in the market and what's out there right now. So I'm all right right now, but I'm sort of querying one, but very slowly, like sending out like 5 queries every couple of weeks or something like that.
No, it's a balance, isn't it, between trying to do something commercial and also doing something that you love and that you care about.
Yes, and I have one, you know, the one that I tried to query and kind of put on the back burner, I love a lot, but it has zombies in it, zombies have always terrified me, and I wouldn't necessarily say it's a zombie story. It's a human story set in like a zombie world, but I've had a lot of people who are like, zombies are so over, and I'm like, no, they are not. They're still in the theater.
No,
zombies are always going to be there, but I think I'm just going to wait a little bit longer until people aren't like so overdone with zombies, and then it'll be fresh and new. But my last question for you is my favorite one. I love, as a book lover, I just love for us to all share our favorite books. So I want to ask you what your favorite book is right now. This is not your favorite book of all time. Just a favorite book that you've read recently.
Well, I do have an answer, actually. It's the 7 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle.
Ugh, it's the best book ever.
How good is it?
Oh, it's so good.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Now it has everything I love. It's just got, you know, it's an amazing murder mystery. It's got incredible pace. It's beautiful language. And just loved how crazily inventive it was.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Talking about a difficult book to write, like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, how did he stay on top of all of that?
He must have, I feel like he's an outliner. Like, he had to have been keeping notes, because otherwise you'd get things mixed up. I read that book, I don't know, I had an arc of it before it came out, and I was like, what is this? I read it in like one day. I was like, this is the most amazing book I've read in a really long time. I love that book.
It's just absolutely fantastic. And I suppose for me, like, the two things I really love in books, you know, my favorite books. So a lot of my favorite writers are people like Maggie O'Farrell and Julie Myerson, Kate Atkinson, Sarah Waters. They're people who, they write a really suspenseful novel, but with really gorgeous language as well.
Yeah.
And I think he did both amazingly. Like, I just thought the writing was fantastic. But the plot was so good as well. And it's hard to do both, and to be so inventive and to be so creative. No, it's fabulous.
Oh, I know. Just a, what an amazing idea to come to your head and be like, oh, yeah, I can make this work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that book. Alrighty. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me for the podcast. And everybody, The Girl Before You is out on paperback August 22nd. As always, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Rate and review it wherever you're listening from, or if you don't have the option, like on Spotify or whatever, share it on your Twitter, your Instagram, and get ready for an agent interview next week. As always, you know, I am currently on the call out for 2020 guests. So if you have a book coming out in 2020, or you're an agent who wants to be on the podcast, I'm trying to record a bunch of stuff before the end of the year so that when our new edition arrives, I already have a bunch of stuff done and I can just be sleep deprived all by myself. And if you have a book that you want to be featured, or you just want to chat and be my friend, connect with me on Instagram and Twitter at Rose Quinney, Quinny, and hit up my website, rosequinco.com. All right, guys. Set your alarms for next Friday. New episode. See ya.